Recently, our reporter Madison Staten spoke with Peak Behavioral Health CEO Sandy Emanuel on how the pandemic has affected mental health.
I mean, we all have the same anxieties. We're all dealing with the same fears related to this. And it's also normal and also a situation that none of us ever thought in our lifetime we would be in, but here we are. The other thing that I'm seeing is it impacting younger and younger children. And, you know, when school switched immediately to online learning and all activities stopped, that takes a toll on our young children's mental health as well.
Our guest today is Susan Brown from Mesilla Valley Hospital. Your questions are welcome at 575-646-2212. We'll get started right after NPR News. Voice of the Public is coming up next from KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It is 1:06. Welcome to Voice of the Public. As we head into the holiday season, we know that not everyone thinks the holidays are the most wonderful time of the year. And certainly this year, so many of us will be feeling isolated and having trouble finding joy in the season. Our topic today on Voice of the Public is mental health and how it's affecting, how the pandemic is affecting different segments of our population. On the line with me today from Mesilla Valley Hospital is Dr. Susan Brown, a psychiatric nurse practitioner. Welcome to KRWG, Dr. Brown.
Thank you.
It is good to have you with us. And we welcome our audience to call with their questions about mental health during the holiday season and amidst the pandemic. 575-646-2212 is the number to call. You can also follow along on Facebook if you are more comfortable asking your question on the comment thread on Facebook. We invite you to do that. We'll be following along there as well. And I thought today, Dr. Brown, what we could do is look over the various segments of our population, starting with the youngest of the population who have really had their lives turned upside down, maybe in a more impactful way than the rest of us. Let's talk about children up to, say, 12 years old or so and how the pandemic has affected their lives.
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to kind of go from a framework of Erikson. Probably if you've had any kind of type of like intro to psychology class, you probably are familiar with Erikson. He was a psychoanalyst in the 1950s that proposed the 8 stages of development. Stage 1, of course, is birth to 18 months, and that's where the baby actually is going through trust versus mistrust, needing to be having consistent and reliable care, needs to feel secure. That's where we get attachment to our mother, to our family members. I don't really feel that the COVID virus and isolation is really affecting this age group hardly at all. And even our second age group, which is up to 18 months to 3 years, I don't really feel that they are being negatively affected as much as maybe positively. At 18 months to 3 years, this is where we really form an attachment with our mother. We're learning like physical skills, a little bit of sense of independence. But with the isolation and more mothers and fathers being at home, this might actually be somewhat of a good thing at this age, because I feel that these children might get a better sense of attachment to their family. But I think that we are starting to be more affected around the ages of 5 to 12. These children at 5 to 12, they're trying to become independent. They're learning about self-esteem. They're learning new skills, reading, math. Their peer groups are very important to them at this age. And as they get older and more socially adept, their peer group becomes more like a very important hub of their social development, sometimes even more so than their family. So these are the ones that are starting to be really impacted by the social isolation that's been imposed upon us, all the way up to the 18-year-olds. And with the 18-year-olds, they are trying at this time to recognize their personal identity, their values, their beliefs and goals. This is where, between 12 and 18, we learn how to fit into society. Our body image becomes very important. And again, our friends are our world. So right now, with the isolation and the virtual learning, I think that this is the age group that's really being impacted right now.
Let's get back to the younger group of kids that you mentioned, 5 to 12. And I think back to my own childhood and something that I would say traumatized me, and my parents didn't know. It was the threat of the Cold War. I would see things on television and hear things on the news and go to bed just absolutely terrified that the United States and Russia were going to nuke one another. And it kept me awake at night. And I really stressed out about it. And I wonder, are the children who are living through this pandemic in that age group where, you know, they're not necessarily ready to process it all in the big picture, what kind of trauma they're actually experiencing?
And, you know, that's a very good question. And it's sort of hard for us to know, but I think what's really important is at the younger age to sort of limit what they're watching on TV. In other words, I don't think that it's so appropriate for our children at that young age to be seeing refrigerator trucks with bodies in them, but maybe just give them basic knowledge, things that they really need to know about the virus at this time, about social distancing and the sanitizing. And if we can sort of steer away from the parts that are really, you know, scary to them, like death, I think that they need to know that that's a possibility. But I don't think that we need to give them more information at this time than they can handle, especially the younger ones. And, you know, what another suggestion of mine is that we talk about this, you know, with our children. You know, sit down and just have a really good conversation and say, you know, what do you know about this? Mm-hmm. And what do you think about it? How do you feel about it? And don't just ask the questions, but really listen to their answers. And it's not always that we have to give them any advice or we have to, you know, tell them anything, but just so that they know that they're heard and we're listening to them, I think is really important.
I really feel for parents with kids in this age group because on the one hand, and the younger, the more difficult I think it would be, you had to get them to wear masks, right? And leave them on if you went out, if you go out. And how do you get them to do that without scaring them?
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think simple explanations are always the best. You know, explain to them that there's some things in the air that, you know, we don't want them to be breathing right now that might be harmful to their bodies. And so we're going to be very careful and wear our masks. You know, the other thing that may seem trite, but I think it's kind of important, is to let them maybe pick out the mask that they like, you know, something that they might feel is fun to wear. Just trying to make it just a little bit easier for them.
If you have a child in that particular age group, how do you know if they need some outside help?
So some of the things that we look for to tell us that a child might be getting into some trouble is isolation, where, well, we know we're all socially isolated, but isolation in the terms of not really conversing with their family, being alone, being in their room a lot, not really talking to us. Then look at how are they sleeping? Are they having any trouble with sleep? Are they sleeping too much? Are they waking up at night, having any nightmares? And then we can look at their appetite. Are they eating, you know, or have they had any changes in their appetite? Maybe they're eating too much and they're stress eating. So those are some of the things we can look at, as well as listening to them and hearing what they have to say about their own feelings. Are they feeling sad? You know, are they not wanting to be involved? So some of those are the things that we would look for in children to see if there's any depression really setting in.
575-646-2212, the number to call as we speak with Dr. Susan Brown, psychiatric nurse practitioner from Mesilla Valley Hospital today, about mental health. We're heading into the holiday season, and as it is, a lot of people get the holiday blues or seasonal affective disorder, and now with the pandemic, we're all going to be feeling much more isolated. Families are having to make choices to stay away from each other this holiday season, and that's hard for everyone. I want to invite your questions for Dr. Brown at 646-2212. She'll be here with us until 2 o'clock, and we would be glad to answer your questions. And if you would like to ask your question as you follow along on Facebook, you're certainly welcome to do that as well. Let's move into that group that you identified as what may be the most effective, the teen group. What are the first things we need to know either as teenagers or as parents of teenagers during this situation?
Well, I think if we can keep in mind how important their social peer group is to them, I think it will help us understand how they're feeling. The one thing that they do have that's a benefit is that they are really technology natives. They were born and raised in technology, mm-hmm. and they know more about it than we do as adults. And this is a pretty good avenue for them to reach out to their friends through Facebook, through any kind of social networking, and they're proficient at it. So that's the good thing. I don't think that this really replaces the social interaction that they really need, because they're not being able to interact face to face. The other thing that is really important at this age group is this is how they develop skills in dealing with authority figures, recognizing their values, figuring out who they are. And sometimes that's hard to do when you're just around your immediate family, and they need the perspective of other people to figure their own self out. And that's why this social interaction is so important at this age. They're also, again, learning about their body image and how important that is and how they fit in. Just how do they fit into this society? So this is a major impact on these teenagers. And really, the best thing I think that we can help them with is encourage them to speak to their friends and be if they need to be on social media in the evening so that they can, talk to their friends, maybe even have a group chat, figure out how they can even play some games on group media. Those are the things that are really important because they really need that sense of connection with their peers.
In this situation, are the signs the same for a parent if there is something that they need to address?
Yes, it is. But the one thing that I probably should have added, even with the younger children, but especially with this group, you might see defiance and some anger and irritability, because that goes hand in hand with depression, and they're probably anxious. So besides the change in sleeping and eating patterns and being socially isolated from their family, self-imposed, we should probably also look at those things, anger, defiance, irritability.
I see. Moving on to maybe the next segment of the population, let's talk about working adults and parents themselves. We have, you know, watched as our friends and our coworkers have tried to deal with either being essential workers and trying to manage their children's education at the same time, or themselves losing a job and trying to keep it all together. What are you seeing in terms of how that segment of the population is being affected?
You know, I think that this is a large segment of the population that is really struggling right now. You know, just being home with your children and trying to be a mother or a father and then becoming a surrogate teacher has to be very difficult. Being with your children on that computer screen and redirecting them when they need it, helping them open up files and do different things on the computer, assuring that they get their assignments in, you know, and dealing with meltdowns. There's meltdowns, not just with the children, but with the adults. You know, this is a lot of pressure on families right now. And I think some of the things that we should keep in mind is that right now, if you need to take a few minutes and just get away from that computer screen and chill out for a bit, you know, do what you do to help yourself relax. If, you know, you're one of those people that likes to do Irish River dance, go in your bedroom. Do it, you know, include your kids, you know, just Michael Flatley it, you know. Do something that will just get you out of that stressful moment, even if it's for a few minutes. And if your children are having the meltdowns on the computer as well as you, bring your children into what you're doing. Include them in your activity, you know. Toss a football with them for a few minutes. Just talk to them, laugh, do something to change what's going on in their mind at that moment so that they can calm down and ground themselves. But I think that the group of young parents right now that are really struggling, they really need to take care of themselves as much as they can and realize, you know, that they need time for themselves. And I know that the first thing they're thinking is, there is no time for myself. Mm. Making just even a few minutes, several times a day, you know, to check yourself out of that, you know, that environment for a little bit. Take some deep breaths. You know, use some mindfulness techniques and just try to bolster yourself back up. And I think that also, as a community, we need to help each other. Call a friend that's going through the same thing you are. You know, commiserate. I mean, that's what we need to do sometimes. Bounce ideas off of each other and just know that you're not alone.
For those folks who have lost jobs, who are struggling financially, on top of everything else, and I mean, it really is a desperate situation. How do you cope?
Well, you know, and that's a very good question. You know, some of the fixes are not easy. Sometimes it is a desperate situation economically. If you've lost your job and you're having to go to food banks to get food, coping with those situations sometimes can seem insurmountable. But I feel that if people can learn to ask for help when they need it, recognize when they need their help, and use the as many available resources in their family and in their community and in their church as possible, I think that this is the thing that's going to help us get through.
575-646-2212 is the number to call. Voice of the Public on KRWG. We are joined today by psychiatric nurse practitioner Dr. Susan Brown from Mesilla Valley Hospital. How long have you been with Mesilla Valley Hospital?
Almost 4 years now.
And what is your background?
So I was a critical care nurse for many years, and I decided that I needed to change my field of interest because I saw a huge need for psychiatric care in our community. I went back to school. I got a doctorate degree in nursing practice, and my focus is on psychiatry. Then I started to work in a psychiatric hospital in performance improvement. I moved on to be a chief nursing officer of a psychiatric facility, and I think those experiences were invaluable to me. I could see from several different perspectives the needs that we have in our community for psychiatric care. And from then, after I received my doctorate degree, I became board certified as a nurse practitioner and became a provider. I have worked in about two different other facilities, but I've been here for about 4 years at Mesilla Valley.
I want to get back to that. The point of noticing the critical need in our community. But right now, Carrie Bachman is on the line holding with a question. Thanks for calling, Carrie. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Casey. And it's great to have Dr. Brown here sharing her expertise. You know, I'm really struck, Dr. Brown, when you're talking about how the pandemic affects people of different ages, and even just looking at working adults, some are affected by, like, literally having no space to themselves, and others are affected by having no job, and some have, you know, a job that's way too busy and they're exposed to the virus, and others are lonely. I mean, we have people at all ends of the spectrum. And it struck me when you said, you know, calling a friend, commiserating, how important that can be to know you're not alone and know that there are other people to support you. Like, just how important that is, and how do you see that happening in our community with people who are in crisis? What can regular folk do who may be feeling, you know, some sense of being stressed, but before we get to a crisis where they may have to go to Mesilla Valley Hospital, let's say?
Well, you know, I feel that if you are using the resources that you have at hand, talking with your family, talking with your friends, maybe talking to members of your church, those closest to you, and you're not really getting all the help that you feel like you need, or those resources aren't available, I think at that point it might be a good idea to even consider some therapy in the community. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of therapy in the community virtually right now, and that might be the next step, is besides utilizing your resources that are at your immediate disposal, thinking about maybe, you know, going into some type of therapy if you feel that that's needed and you need somebody to talk to and just help you through the crisis. That might prevent you from winding up in a psychiatric facility. And it may help you also just navigate your way through this crisis, this troubling time that we're in.
You know, I appreciate that. Is there a number folks can call? I mean, I know we give out the New Mexico Crisis Line number when folks need that, but is there something other than that that you would suggest?
You know, I think that you can always call us here at Mesilla Valley Hospital be, like, put in touch with any type of resources that are available in the community. And I know that there is a crisis hotline, and I'm so terribly sorry that I don't have it in front of me right now, but we can make it available on the Facebook page. As soon as we are finished with this broadcast, we can put some numbers out there for the community and make them available. And I just apologize that I don't have them in front of me right now.
No, that's okay. I mean, I can even look it up or something if that would be relevant. I know I work with an organization where we, Doñana Communities United, and sometimes we have people in crisis, and they've been very helpful. It's called the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line.
Yes.
Right.
And I don't know if you'd like me to share the number, or I can text it to you and you all can talk about it later on in the show. But
I would say go right ahead. I was Googling the same thing, Carrie, as you were talking about that. So go right ahead.
You know, I wasn't calling to give this, but I thought it's a really good resource. It's 1-855-662-7474, and that's toll-free 24/7. It's the crisis and access line. Anybody can call, and they're super helpful, calm, and they also can refer you. There's another number for a peer-to-peer warm line where you can just talk, you know, if you're not in crisis but needing some support. The other thing I was going to suggest is if folks are interested in, you know, being part of the solution but also feeling like they themselves are in crisis, we all have gifts that we can share. And as you say, Dr. Brown, talking to each other is really helpful. And if people are interested in learning and participating in a program that helps you do that, I feel happy to talk with them. We have something called Cruces Contigo, where we match people together, and they just have conversations that help address issues of loneliness and isolation and that social connection that we're all missing right now. So if people are interested in that, they can give me a call at 575-496-4330. Just another resource.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Carrie, I appreciate that. You are just a wealth of information. I'm so glad that you called in.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're participating and that the hospital is there for people when they need it. Thank you very much. You do really challenging work, and it's very important.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate your assistance.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, Carrie. 575-646-2212, the number to call if you have a question. The number that Carrie gave you there for the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line. There's also a website, nmcrisisline.com, and it has a lot of really good information as well. There's also the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and that's NAMI.org, N-A-M-I.org. So there's another resource. And one of the difficulties, I think, is Dr. Brown, is getting people to use those resources when they need them. What is the block that happens from people actually asking for help when they need it most?
You know, there's always been a stigma about asking for help when it's, you know, mental health. People don't want to seem that they are quote unquote crazy or, you know, they don't want to feel that they are weak in any way. And, you know, there is also that stigma that people will know your business. But, you know, we need to get over that. We need to start treating mental health issues the same way we would treat diabetes. I mean, this is our bodies, our lives. Our brain is just an organ in our body. And we need to get over that stigma. But I do believe that that's one of the reasons why people don't call.
Yeah. And especially more men than women, right?
Oh, yes. You know, it's very difficult, you know, for any of us to ask for help. But, you know, men have, you know, had that sense that they are the strong ones in families and that they are, you know, the rock of a family. And they mostly are. But, you know, sometimes even that rock needs some help. And, you know, need somebody to support them. So I think that you're right. Men have traditionally been the ones that have been very reluctant to call for help. So I hope that this is changing in the society now. I really do.
And obviously, sometimes people don't necessarily know that the difficulty that they're having is with mental health. I think people, just a guess, of course, on my part, but people tend to start finding ways to, say, self-medicate without realizing that that's not going to fix the problem. Is that correct?
Right. Those maladaptive coping skills. So, you know, we all know that sometimes people turn to alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, lots of ways to escape their reality. They're medicating themselves because sometimes they are making themselves more numb to their situation. And you're right. Sometimes they don't even recognize that that's what they're doing until it becomes a problem. So, right, recognizing what's going on with your own self is so important. And, you know, that brings us to, like, mindfulness, being mindful of our own body and our own emotions, taking time to just focus on the present, being intentional and thoughtful about how you're feeling, what you're doing. Just, you know, self-awareness is very important. Also, listening to your family, listening to your friends. When a person is very stressed and is, you know, kind of functioning in sort of crisis mode, self-medicating, they might not, like you say, recognize it, but their family and their friends oftentimes do. So even just listening to your family and what they have, you know, listening to what they have to say and keeping an open mind about their thoughts of what might be happening to you is also very important during this time.
575-646-2212, the number to call. Our topic today, mental health, as we head into the holiday season, a very different holiday season this year. Already a time that a lot of folks are feeling down, and for a variety of reasons. We left off with working adults, and I wanted to move on to the next category. It's already 1:36. I can't believe it, but I want to address our elderly population. This is a segment of the population that in some cases, those who are living in, say, assisted living facilities have been completely isolated, so much more so than the rest of the population. Tell us a little bit about what those folks are going through and how they can be helped.
So you're exactly right. You know, the older population right now, you know, it's hard for them to even meet the milestones that they're supposed to be meeting, you know, at their age and their developmental stage. You know, part of what is to be accomplished in that age group is, you know, feeling about, looking back on your life, taking stock of everything that you've done, you know, trying to figure out if you made any kind of mark on the world. You know, did you have a good life? Did you nurture your children, raise your children? Were you productive at work? You know, were you involved in the community? Those are the things that people usually look back and, you know, take stock of, kind of trying to think about their legacy. And we do this by reminiscing a lot with family, with friends, you know, with people in our age group. Being in an assisted living facility only where you're seeing your family through, the glass, only seeing the same, God bless them, healthcare workers every day, you know, and sometimes not even being able to be around your peers is especially difficult for them. And if we think about the fact that some of them may already be having some dementia and, you know, struggling with their own, you know, their own mental health before this happened, the isolation is just compounding it. So, you know, one of the things that we can always do is if we have a family member or a friend or someone we know in an assisted living, even if we can just see them through that glass, that's their world sometimes, is seeing somebody. Sending them cards or letters, making sure that they do feel their connection with their family. And, you know, also we need to support those people that are on the front lines in those nursing homes. I just can't imagine what they're going through every day, you know. So also being mindful that those people need a pat on the back. They need recognition, and they need support. But this older generation, you know, even the ones that are at home, we need to be checking on them, making sure that they're safe, that they have all the basic necessities that they need, but also giving them that human connection, even if it's through the phone or seeing that, like standing in their yard and talking to them at the doorway with our masks on, you know, just giving them some type of human connection is so important at this time.
We have Maggie on the line holding with a question for Dr. Susan Brown. Maggie, welcome to Voice of the Public. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. My concern was I wanted to make Dr. Brown aware of the need for broadband connection to be more available, especially in small towns and rural areas. And I just wanted to explain something that happened to me. I went more than 10 weeks without telephone service when a phone I'd been using for 5 years failed in the spring. And it was such a runaround, I couldn't even begin to describe it. I became marginalized so easily to such an extent that it was very frightening. I do not have a computer at home, mm-hmm. and it wound up that I was unable to communicate with anyone. And when I went around town to try to find a way to do so, it was very difficult to find a landline. And even when I did, the telephone simply never connected. They sent 4 replacement phones. None of them would work. And I finally had to buy a phone at Dollar General, which is the phone that I'm talking to you on. And I just wanted to stress the importance, the awareness that especially elderly people who might be disabled or whatever, have dementia, whatever the case may be, would not have been able to navigate this problem that I went through. It was really something I just couldn't believe. I reported it to the FCC, and that I did get a response, but that would take too much time to describe. I just think that there are things that can be done to facilitate communications that would enable people to feel less stranded, less lonely, and less marginalized. And whether that means connecting, making these things aware to the Biden administration or somehow facilitating these means of communication, I don't know what it might be, but I think there's a real need for it.
You are right about that.
You certainly are. And I'm very sorry that you had to go through that experience. I'm sure that must have been sort of devastating for you. But, you know, I see what you're saying. I have elderly parents myself who finally have an iPhone, but they don't have a computer in their home either. And even if they did, like you say, sometimes for those elderly, it's very difficult to navigate, you know, the intricacies of the internet and all of that. But you're right. We do need some sort of resources for some type of connection, even if we're going to use virtual therapy, virtual learning. And I often even think of our reservations in northern New Mexico, where people are very remote and stranded, basically, from bigger towns during this COVID crisis. I also feel that we all need to work together to figure out a solution so that we can get people better connected. And that might even come at our county level. I do agree that, you know, these needs need to be brought up on a governmental platform. But even at our community and our county level, this is very important to bring up, especially during this time, because I do see that need myself.
I have met people who are paying, they are living in public housing and paying over $170 a month to bundle their service for their phone, mm-hmm. the internet connection and television and so on and so forth. I don't personally even own a television or have a computer. But to me, when I know for a fact that the Wi-Fi could be made available in a complex of apartment buildings, apartments, something like that, just by putting the proper access on the property at 2 or 3 locations that all the apartments could use, this kind of price gouging and competition is, in my opinion, no longer important. I won't take any more of your time, but I really appreciate your efforts to try to make these connectivity issues applicable to mental health and to decreasing the marginalization of so many people. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Maggie, for highlighting that problem. It certainly is something that really jumped off the page at us once the pandemic required school children to start trying to learn remotely. And you mentioned the reservations, but that problem is everywhere around our state. And certainly exists among the many communities that we would call colonias around our area, too. So it may be a conversation for a different time, and perhaps it will be something that will be addressed at the New Mexico Legislature's special meeting that they're holding next week, a way to get people across the state connected. But that certainly does, apply here to this situation as well, right?
Exactly.
We have been, we've had Wayne holding on the line now for a bit of time. Thank you, Wayne, for your patience. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm Wayne Huber, artist in town, been around for years, and I'm 80 now, and unfortunately my classes have shut down at Chris's Creative, so I can't teach. I can paint, which is good news, and I can use a computer. And one thing I do, both with a computer and with my cell phone, is I text people whenever I hear there's something wonderful, for instance, on public television or public radio, about 50 people know from me. Now, I don't know if they all appreciate it, but I do that, and that kind of gets me out. And I also work with Carrie, who was on earlier, in her group, and I do make a phone call regularly to someone in our system. So she's 95, and I call her on a regular basis just to check on and see how she's doing. But what I really was going to share is that since I'm not teaching now, and since selling art right now is a challenge, I've had to figure out how to cut back seriously on my expenses in order to survive. And one thing I've discovered is that I can call the lender on my auto, and a lender, actually the state of New Mexico, has given me a small business loan, and I have zero payments for 3 months. And by negotiating with my car payment, they did zero payments for 2 months, and that picks up again in January. So, the financial struggle is as serious as everything. And of course, it really affects us emotionally when we can't pay our bills. So there's ways of just contacting these people. And it's amazing how negotiable a lot of them will be. I thought I'd throw that out.
Well, thank you, Wayne. I got to say, it must have been a great feeling when you did make that call and make progress, right?
Right.
All right. Thank you, Wayne, for your comments.
Wayne, I want to thank you for being such a proponent of your community and getting all these 50 people involved. I mean, that's pretty amazing in itself, and I appreciate
you. Well, I just let everybody know about all your wonderful shows that you have on public radio and public TV. It's about the only thing I tune into, and I can't wait for Leora in about 15 minutes.
She's coming up soon. That's right. It's intermezzo by request.
I've called her every month, every Friday for the last 20 years.
How about that?
She expects my call.
All right.
Leora always expects my call.
Well, thank you for being there, Wayne. We do appreciate it. And thank you for calling today. It's Voice of the Public, 575-646-2212. If you have a question with the maybe 12 minutes that we have left, Dr. Brown, thank you for being here today. Dr. Susan Brown, psychiatric nurse practitioner with Mesilla Valley Hospital. And we left off with our elderly population and how important it is to just maintain as much communication as possible. Cards, letters, go to the glass and wave at the glass if that's what you have to do, because it's a struggle. It certainly is a struggle. I couldn't imagine having an elderly parent in that situation at this point. And that's another thing that affects the mental health of that middle group of people as well, because you feel so helpless. How do you fight those feelings of helplessness?
And, that is a difficult question to really answer because it's always so personal. But, I think being able to talk to people about that the feelings that you're having, and do some exercises in mindfulness, kind of bring you out of that funk a little bit. For example, you know, this can even be family oriented. Together as a family, go for a walk outside. Get out in the sunshine. You know, just listen to the sounds of nature, the smells, the sights. You know, pay attention to your walk. Pay attention to all the things that are going on around you. And don't just, you know, barrel through your walk for exercise, but really take the time, enjoy it, look around. And it may not help totally with those feelings of helplessness, but it will help you in the moment to focus and ground yourself. The other thing that I can never stress enough is use your resources. You know, if you're feeling hopeless and helpless, just remember, if your daily functioning is being affected by feelings of being hopeless, helpless, isolative, you know, if you're noticing you're not eating, you're not sleeping, your focus and concentration are off, you're crying, you're not able to really care for yourself on a daily basis, you know, with daily showering, those type of things. These are all warning signs that you really need some help. And I'm not just trying to push Mesilla Valley Hospital. There are so many wonderful providers in this community. But you can always come to Mesilla Valley Hospital for an evaluation. We would be glad to evaluate you and provide you with some resources if it's not inpatient psychiatric care that you need. We have referrals that we can make. So, again, just beware of all those warning signs that things are getting out of control.
It is 1:51. As we head into the holiday season, talk a little bit about people who just tend to feel down during the holidays and seasonal affective disorder.
Okay. Well, most people are aware of what seasonal affective disorder is, but just to give a brief overview, so it's basically depression that's related to change in seasons. Usually it's when fall starts to go into winter and, you know, we're short on daylight hours. That's the most prevalent time for seasonal affective disorder. We're not out in the sun as much as we normally are. We're not out in the outdoors as much as we normally are. And so we're not getting that vitamin D and that shot of sunshine that we need. Some of the very noticeable symptoms of seasonal affective disorder can be oversleeping in the winter months, cravings for carbs, weight gain, and low energy. These are some of the symptoms that we see in seasonal affective disorder. Getting out in our New Mexico sunshine, of course, is like one of the best remedies.
Yeah.
But if not possible, we can kind of mimic that sunshine with light therapy. So there are treatments for seasonal affective disorder, and some of them are easier than you think. People can have a light therapy box close to their workstation. You know, there's other ways to treat this, but especially getting out into our sun, you know, and just being out in our in the daylight hours as much as we can, but also recognizing this change in our mood and our affect. That's very important.
And for folks who have a specific trauma associated with holidays, I know it can be, you know, it's something that you don't ever forget. These traumas we don't, you know, ever truly get over. They're always with us. Say losing a loved one during the holiday season. What are some tools that you can use in order to find joy in the holidays?
So, you know, some of the things that I think might be helpful is, you know, again, being around your friends, being around your support system, recognizing your support system. If you see that you're isolating more than usual, you know, try to recognize that and you know, change it up. Get, you know, as much as you can, get outdoors. Talk to your family and friends on the phone. If you have a group in your household, family members that you don't have to social distance from, of course, talk to them. Talk it out. Express how you're feeling. And, you know, it's not always a bad thing to recognize negative feelings. If we recognize them, then we don't just keep them all bottled up inside. We can talk them out and we can work through and process some of those emotions. And also, being somewhat selfless at the holiday season is always helpful. Mm-hmm. Thinking of what others might need. And how you can be helpful to them. So sort of coming out of your own self and trying to help others at this season, that will also help you. So besides, you know, recognizing and processing through those emotions, trying to be more active, trying to be around more people, these are always going to help.
You mentioned earlier, you know, when you looked around and noticed the real need for mental health care in New Mexico. With the last couple of minutes here, where do we stand? We had a major shakeup in our health care providers a couple of years ago. How are we doing today?
You know, I think that we are still short of psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners in our community. But, you know, we do have NMSU, which is putting out doctorately prepared nurse practitioners. And, you know, we have Burrell College now. We have a lot of more up-and-coming resources for us. You know, we do have a very caring community of mental health providers. And I feel like as a community, we are all trying our best to see as many people as possible. And I know that the demand is very high out there, and sometimes people are having to wait for an appointment to see someone, and that can be very frustrating. Mm-hmm. I just hope and pray that with the new resources, like with the Burrell College, New Mexico State, with their nurse practitioner program, that we are going to start seeing a better pool of mental health professionals.
What has been the hardest part of your job?
Wow, that's a good question. I think the hardest part of my job is seeing that we have so many people in our community with so many needs, mental health needs, but economic needs. We just have so many people that it's hard to get to them all, and it's hard to be in, you know, in 10 places at one time. And I think that feeling stretched and, you know, our time is limited, our resources are limited, I think that's the hardest part of our job at times.
I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. How would you know if you needed help in that area?
You know, I think that health professionals, mental health professionals, we are somewhat self-aware, but we also rely on our families and our coworkers to tell us, hey, you're a little bit off right now. You know, we're just human, and the stresses of our jobs can also pile up on us. So, you know, sometimes we don't even recognize it until we're told, but again, with our community, with our friends, with our coworkers and our families, I think that's how we get by. I think that's how we make it through.
This holiday season, obviously very different for so many. What would be one or two tips you would offer to help families enjoy the holidays that can already be a pretty stressful time in such different circumstances?
You know, what I would suggest and what I plan to do with my own family is be more mindful. I want to be there for them in every way. I want to focus on, you know, the present moment. I want to be intentional. I want to be thoughtful. I want to make sure that we're doing things together as a family. But we're doing also fun things. We're doing things that we really enjoy. And, you know, by doing fun things with our children and our family, we sort of forget about the virus for a while. We enjoy Christmas. We will enjoy the holiday. And, you know, it's never a bad thing for a child to see a parent having a great time.
Well,
and if we can remember that, that's just going to help our children. That's going to help our family. If they see us enjoying ourselves, that will lead to their enjoyment also.
And with that, we turn things over now to Leora Zeitlin for Intermezzo by Request. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Brown.
Thank you.